questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. We've now reached the final questions in the Illumify Game Changer podcast. In order to ignite a vision of meaningful change, a leader has to be able to engage, align, and mobilize a collective of people who will act. In the Illuminate and Amplify stages of the Illumify Game Changer, Jonathan posed and answered the questions that surfaced what to say, to engage, and to begin to align them. This Unify stage reveals how to ensure they act consistently and in alignment as one collective, rather than going off scattershot in all directions. But just how big does a collective have to be in order to help ignite a vision of meaningful change? Is its size limited, or can it expand? And if so, how? That's exactly what this episode reveals. To extend the last conversation, Jonathan, where you spoke about who do the people you know that they could invoke to join them and you in this collective and your ignition of your change, please answer the next question.
What other networks could you reach? Which other individuals or collectives could you work with on this? What if communities exist that are waiting to connect with you? If only they knew about you and the meaningful change you're going to ignite. That's a great idea. What if communities existed are waiting to connect with you?
And in your case, your vision is about creating a particular new community.
Sure, yeah.
Jean brought that up yesterday. He was looking. He couldn't find it. He stopped looking.
That's right.
He was waiting, and then
When
he heard it, he said, "This is it.
Yeah,
this is what I was looking for."
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
He didn't know it existed, did he?
Yeah.
And he'd been all over the world, literally all over the world, and then he found it one province away, but in his home country. Moved from Montreal to Toronto as a result.
He didn't have to go that far.
A couple of thoughts that immediately spring to mind. I'm going back to the request that I made of the collective earlier this morning.
Good.
And one of the Ricardo said to group three, the people looking for spaces and platforms where we can have focus groups, first conversations.
Your event managers.
Yeah. I would have to make the same request upon myself. Who is not on my radar? Who's not on my radar? And then, you know, this is where this method, our whole Illumify conversation and conversations would, I think, be very helpful, because if we think about the very good digressions we've made along the way,
just a few,
but where we've name checked somebody we admire, or an author, somebody's written a book that we like. You have name checked many, many experts, Marianne, in communications, leadership. We've also gone to places that we didn't think we would go to, the church, for example.
Yes, yeah. That's right. You even used the word worship at one point.
And where we had to go to
church.
Right, the broad church. We ended with the broad church. But where we went to church to borrow the words of religion, because our dry secular words had reached their limits, and couldn't reach what we were trying to get a hold of.
And even ever so reluctantly at times.
Yeah.
Resistingly at times. Yeah. It was in going there that you found the words.
Right. So you rightly teased me this morning by saying any excuse to go to your football club. Well, that would be an easy one. And I, again, thanks to my great friend Andy, I've got a doorway in there.
Yeah.
But also this would give me a great excuse to go to various churches of various faiths because...
And temples.
Yes. Because if I look at the vision and if I look at what the vision is trying to say, I don't think I could avoid doing that. Somehow it would be wrong. And that's...
Well, because it's about being inclusive.
Right, yes.
Not exclusive.
Yes.
Only this faith, for example, not that faith.
Yes.
And not the no faith or...
Yes, right.
It's all encompassing.
Indeed.
Big vision.
Indeed. And where, you know, a faith that I would be interested in would be one that said, okay, I could work with you. I don't need you to come and worship here and join the club, but I can work with you because we can do something together. I love that idea that a church would not close its door, that would say we can still do something together even if you're not one of us.
One of us.
You know,
yeah.
So that's definitely...
Listen, a lot of churches are pretty empty these days.
Right. So there's something there. I think also perhaps finding the courage to go to one or two individuals who you would consider to be above your station. I'm thinking of two or three of the authors I've mentioned where, you know, I'm in awe. Yeah, I'm in awe of some of these people.
Yeah.
Perhaps getting beyond that and thinking, well, I've actually got a real reason to go to these people and to say, look, you have actually inspired me to come to this conclusion or to come to that conclusion. I honestly don't think I would have arrived at my vision without you. And, you know, you were part of that journey. Can we have a conversation?
Oh.
And if that's the conversation, not saying, you know, I want your autograph.
Yeah.
But I actually...
No, this is
you know,
conversation.
Then I think that would help me to... Awe is a good thing. It's good to feel in awe of these people, but then, okay, you've then got to curl your toes and actually...
You too. And, you know, it's a risk, but it's potentially with a tremendous return. I told you off recording, I think it was off recording the other day, that I once did that, maybe 15 years ago. I had been influenced professionally on not storytelling, but engaging a diverse audience by someone, well, even early in my career, this individual, his name is Nick Morgan, actually. I'll give him some kudos. He was the editor of the Harvard Communication Newsletter, and when I started my first job in communication in an organization, I read his newsletter monthly. And then he published a book years later, when he started his own business, and it was called Working the Room, and it's still one of the best books on engagement. And so he's based in Boston area, and I was going to be in Boston area on business. So about 15 years ago, I wrote him based on, I don't know how I contacted him actually, but somehow I got his email address and said I'd be coming to Boston, and could I take him out for dinner? And I positioned it as, you know, you've influenced me, and it would be fun to share some war stories, so to speak. And as I said to you the other day, he didn't know me. I mean, in this climate today, I could be a stalker, you don't know. But he had the good grace to welcome me into a conversation with him. So do that. As much as we respect and have been inspired or influenced by someone, they likely have been in that position themselves. and they are just human. So it's honoring them by saying, could we please have a conversation?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well said.
So three authors you're thinking of. You're thinking of who else?
Yeah, I mentioned the churches.
I'm
seeing a category here that we've talked about a lot within the vision, where there's a conversation about I, as the leader of this vision, want to help you as part of the vision. I've not designed the vision specifically for you. That's not why I'm here. But if I look at the vision, where it's coming from, what we're trying to achieve, then if my vision is successful, I would want you and your community to be among the first to benefit from this. So, you know, I'm thinking of the homeless. We talked about the homeless in various guises, and it's literal, urgent, painful, shameful, unforgivable form that lives and breathes on our streets tonight, each night. I would have to go to them and say, look, there. Again, it's that there's part of the conversation which is you have inspired me to move into action, and I want to, in my own way, help you through the vision. What can we do? What can we do together? What do you think about what do you think about the vision? I think they would have to be there. The homeless, the various marginalized communities,
who to some degree are, that may vary, have not been heard.
Yeah, that's the word I was going to be using. And to be clear, I would have to be honest with them and say, it's back to the exchange. There's an exchange here. As a private citizen, as one individual, I would simply support you in whichever way I can. And I've done that in my own way throughout my professional life.
I have no doubt of that. Yeah. But as a collective, how could you support
them? This is a different conversation where it's a little bit more professional, for want of a better word, where you're saying, look, your organization, your work, but also the suffering of the people that you represent inspired me to move towards action. Where are the synergies here? What can we do together that makes sense? This is within the, back a little bit into Amplify here, in intelligence gathering. If the vision is saying this is intolerable, then where I have to be truthful to the vision at my level as the individual, then I have to talk to these people. And where I say professional, because here at this level it's a relationship of equals. We have something to give each other. Mm-hmm. I hope there's an exchange here.
Put that group. It's not a cohesive group.
No.
Sadly.
No.
Well, not necessarily sadly, but in the context of this prompt, what if communities exist that are waiting to connect with you? If only they knew about you and the meaningful change you're going to ignite.
I think that what you've just said there, as you read that, Marianne, is coming back to that part of the vision where what I'm trying to do, what I'm trying to offer to you and others is to begin the deeper and longer change, which will require time, but where we start to see things differently. And that's part of action. This is not separate from action, but it often has to come first, that we're able to see the world anew, see the world afresh, and then from that, new possibilities. But I was just caught now, I read the beginnings of an article in a British newspaper from a former British Prime Minister, not going to name him, but who was making the point that we've made within this podcast at various moments that if you look at homelessness and poverty among children, yeah, so children, young children going to bed hungry, a fundamental part of the problem is that it's not even part of the national conversation. So how can we address this problem if it's not even part of the story that the nation is telling itself?
And you're evoking Charles Dickens for me. So think of when he wrote his stories that did depict the horrors of the child state.
Yeah, yeah.
It became part of the, I would hope, I mean, it was in the newspaper, so it must have, and people followed it. Chapter by chapter. So at some level, it might have woven into the conversations at the kitchen table.
Right, exactly. And I need to say this very clearly now, publicly to you and Brittany and anybody else listening. I am fully aware of the thousands and thousands of people who are doing amazing work already
but
on precisely
this. Problem of such immense magnitude.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, of course, thank heavens.
All I'm saying at this level now is that I have to feel that there is a community there that I could work with because that this particular suffering that we're talking about was part of my move towards action, the need mm-hmm. to act.
Yeah, it was intolerable.
Right, and to do it in my way.
And where would you welcome them, Jonathan, into your sphere or into your collective? How would you, because not either of those, neither of those has a fixed border.
No.
Or boundary.
And again, I think it comes back to the space there, the space that creates an invitation where it depends on the gifts. It depends on what that person wants to bring. Every contribution is welcome within the vision.
And perhaps the bringing is voicing. Because maybe there's nothing tangible to bring. But what they can bring you is voicing the reality.
Yes, yes.
So that you can better respond to it.
Right.
Within that shared home.
Yes.
And remedy.
Yes. Yeah.
Because back to inclusiveness, it's not to convey that you have to bring something the world thinks currently is of value, something of material worth. And the homeless cannot offer that by virtue of their state. But what they can offer and what you can offer them is an opportunity, A, for them to belong, where they may feel they don't, and to be heard, and to participate, to contribute what they can to your vision of a shared home. The doors are shut to them. In homes now, but they don't need to be.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very important point there. It's where we move beyond sympathy and empathy and charity, and we bring the marginalized and the suffering into the work that we're doing, so that we work together with them.
Yeah,
learn from them, take strength from them. It's the exchange, isn't it?
And the perception. Sadly, is there that constituent, if you call them a constituency of homeless, the perception is they're sleeping on the streets or wherever, the fields, whatever. But in reality, I can certainly speak from the Toronto perspective, they are not necessarily. The reality in Toronto right now is that housing is so expensive. People are living in their cars. When I heard a woman on the radio recently, she's holding three jobs. three jobs. She's a single, middle-aged woman holding three jobs and living in her car.
Yeah.
Or the man I heard who's married, has three kids, and all of them and two nephews are living in a one-bedroom basement flat that belongs to some family member.
Yeah.
They're in, quote, housing of some sort, but they're homeless. So by creating a space of belonging, recognition and belonging, and allowing them to contribute, to be contributors to your vision.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
In turn, empowering them as well.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
One of the most powerful images that I saw recently, thanks to a newspaper, a good newspaper, and I couldn't have seen this without a good newspaper telling this story, taking the picture, is, I don't remember, I think it was when we were in London. It was somewhere between London and, I remember it was a few days before I arrived in Toronto, and we were talking about homelessness in Ireland, where it's particularly acute and has been for more than a decade. So there's been a particular a political failure here. This hasn't been an invisible problem. It's been a very visible problem now for more than a decade, and different governments of different colours have failed to address this and find solutions. So you sense that there's a collective failure here. This was the background against a very unusual riot in Dublin, in the centre of Dublin, and I think it was, so if it was around Toronto, it was sort of early December, where an attack had happened outside a school. I think two or three children were not killed, but injured. And I remember seeing this on my phone, breaking news. I think, oh, this is not good. But then something very strange happened. Within hours, there was a riot on the streets of Dublin. And you thought, wow, what on earth is going on here? How do you get from one thing to the next within hours? It ended up being a very nasty right-wing, xenophobic, nationalistic riot. So the far right. So what?
Because they're organized.
Exactly. So it revealed a level of organization where they're waiting for the spark, whatever it is.
Yeah, the opportunity.
Right, and fast forward to about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, where obviously people at the Guardian newspaper had been rightly following the story and seeing how things developed. I think that was probably how this unfolded. And there's a wonderful image of a number of Muslim women on the streets of Dublin running a soup kitchen for the homeless in Dublin.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah,
there you go.
Really, really, you know, what a powerful image of the marginalized.
The marginalized.
Working with, helping the marginalized from very different cultures. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful, but still, you know, the important point here is we shouldn't be here.
Exactly.
In 2024, in Western Europe or North America,
exactly.
We shouldn't be here. So we have to. You know, we have both the intolerable. We have the beauty of the work being done on the street by the marginalised. How inspiring is that? But at the same time, the intolerable, where we ask ourselves, how is this possible? How is this possible? So,
and could intolerable with the status quo be your link in part to the other answer to this card? What other networks could you reach?
Mm.
When you scan that landscape and on whatever issue is part of your all-encompassing vision, and could it be through the media, through connections of connections of connections, you can see other. You will know where else people are feeling, groups, networks of people are feeling that intolerable pain of whatever is missing.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of looking at it. And to avoid being scattershot,
yes.
to stick with the unity,
yep.
Look carefully,
yes.
around the landscape.
Look carefully.
Who are close to your vision in some way or part of the
vision.
Where
there's still alignment and integrity.
Right, exactly, yeah. exactly.
Your vision, to some degree, is an elastic band. But to some degree, it is not.
Right.
And you are the one holding it your hands.
Yeah, that's a very good way of looking at it. Because yes, we've talked a lot about the suppleness within the vision. Yeah. But it must have its own limits. Otherwise, you dissolve and lose energy. And
yeah. And it may be, the expression, getting on the bandwagon. It may be as your vision starts to reach new corridors of society, again, there may be some wanting to jump on the bandwagon who don't share. They're not in integrity with your vision, whether they're a network in itself, a group, large group in and of themselves, or small, or individuals. It is about reaching, inviting in those who may not fully know the scope of your vision at the start, but who are not misaligned with it.
Mm.
And using your discernment, because again, part of your role, Jonathan, as a visionary, is to protect and preserve. Would you like to go back and summarize the question?
Yeah. What other networks could you reach? Which other individuals or collectives could you work with on this? And I've felt myself being drawn to the easy ones that come to mind very quickly, because we have an affinity. So our local football club, a group of people that we know, admire. But then we've pushed beyond that to people that we might avoid because we're in awe of them, or we think we're below their station, or they wouldn't have the time. So the people who have inspired us, the writers, the authors, the researchers, the experts, where we have to have a conversation which allows us to get beyond that respect and actually have an exchange where you say, look, your work has inspired me. And I believe there's a genuine opportunity, even if it's just one conversation, let's have that. So that those individuals, I think, are important. I like this idea of looking back over the conversations we've had within Illumify and the digressions, the journeys we've made, and what is it telling us? So if we've gone to church, together to borrow language, then we should continue going to church for more.
Language isn't only in church.
No,
it's in other religious institutions.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. All the faiths,
yeah.
The temples, the synagogues, all of them, the mosques, where that they have been there on the journey. So how could we ignore them now? How would we?
Yeah, and they don't all combined.
No.
They do not represent everyone.
No.
But they do represent a significant number.
Yes.
All of whom can belong.
Yes.
In that shared home.
Yes, absolutely.
Metaphorically.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's right. So they are there. And then the final category that we finished on, and we gave one example, the homeless, but there will be others. But the principle there is, even though the vision is not designed very specifically to support this group or this group, nonetheless, the vision, if it is true and successful and has legs, will help some people first. It must. That seems to be true to me. The collective may be very, very varied, I would want it to be very varied, people from all sorts of different walks of life. That's my gut feeling. I would want a very varied collective. That feels very true to me. But in almost not contradiction, but in contrast to that, I equally like the idea that some people would benefit from this very quickly because they are the people who are in
dire
straits, in emergency.
Yeah. So as you stand at that summit of your vision and look out at now the collective that's assembling by virtue of where you know you could start, those four groups you've spoken of, and then who those people could reach, and now what other networks that you may not have considered that may actually represent communities that will respond, but are waiting, they're in wait. So all of those combined, as you stand at the summit for that perspective, what do you see as a collective?
I saw a market square.
which, lovely.
And I know how I got there. It's the mix of home, Nottingham, where it's the
well,
old.
You have a market square.
It's called the old market square. The old market square. So I was drawn to that.
Can you describe that for we non-Brits?
It's rather a grand city hall, which if you imagine St. Paul's Cathedral in shape with the dome.
Which I love,
Yes, and then really shrink it down to the size of a Midlands town, you'll get there. It's there's a similarity in shape, just that the dome is beautiful. So nowhere near as grand as St. Paul's Cathedral, but it's that sort of shape. And then in front of it, some architects 10, 15 years ago made a very brave decision to really open up the square in front of it and have a very flat, open surface. Didn't please everybody, but I could see what they're trying to do. So it's just a very, very open space.
Yeah.
And when, on the rare occasions that our football team actually wins something, the team...
Hey, hold on. I thought this was an exemplary...
The glorious pass. Okay, the glorious
just
pass.
Shoot. I thought it was... Still present.
Yeah. No, we were... The team and the manager that it will stand on the balcony.
Okay.
And parade the trophy to... Wow. It's really wonderful. It's really wonderful. So I saw that. So that's local reasons. But I'm also drawn to the Maidan in Kyiv. And what that was. So the idea
different
of
different ages, children,
yes,
parents,
yes,
elderly, all coming together,
yes, that's right?
In that different
in that
setting.
Place, incredibly powerful. Yeah. And a real moment of democracy in action, embodied.
Embodied.
Absolutely embodied.
Yeah.
So, when you said that, I thought the marketplace, not one particular marketplace, but just as an image of people moving around,
gathering,
talking,
assembling,
gathering, a lot of energy, a lot of noise,
classes.
Chatter.
Can you see that, Brittany? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very vibrant.
Vibrant, that's a great
really, word. Really lovely, safe place. Incredibly diverse because everybody's bringing different things to the market and they're all perhaps all there for different reasons and a real
beautiful
chatter of people around the place. I really like that.
Unlike, and the opposite, the contrast here and where we've had these conversations, the current state, isolation, alienation, dismay, not vibrant.
No.
Not diverse.
That's right. And I see Nottingham suffering now when I go home, the centre of the city. Anybody from Nottingham will know this. It's the parts of the city look great, still beautiful old buildings, and you think, okay, we're going to be okay. But then you turn the corner, you look down the next street, and there are shops still boarded up or
desolate.
Empty. And it's sad.
Yeah.
It's really sad. And that question there, was there before the pandemic? The pandemic made it a lot worse.
The
pandemic
right.
really...
The fissures were there, but now the cracks are deeper.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wider and deeper.
So the question of what we want our cities to become...
Yeah.
And
which
I would,
is where many, the multitudes live.
Yes, yes.
Sharing a home.
Yes.
Of that city.
Yes. Well, you've almost answered the question, actually, because for me, I think part of the answer for some British cities, not all, I have no experience of urban planning. I know it's a huge discipline and a very noble one. A lot of really deep thinking goes into how we plan and organise a city. It's a wonderful discipline. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
I know nothing about that, but I have a gut feeling that cities, including big cities, should be places where people live.
Yes. Yeah. There's a notion.
There
Imagine
you go.
That.
Radical.
Yeah, places pretty
where,
radical.
Where people wake up in the morning and step out of their flat in the middle of a city. Radical. There you go. There is, and there's something deeply healthy and democratic and civil about that.
Yeah. And they're not afraid to step out.
Right. Well, safety comes into that.
Safety comes into that.
So making our cities feel safe because we live there, we sleep there, we wake up there.
I'm thinking as you say that, though, another contrast perhaps, because I'm no expert on this, but ancient Rome, they were great city builders, the ancient Romans. And some of their structures, for example, still exist. So they built them pretty darn well.
And they were not blocks of flats.
No, they weren't blocks of flats. But within their own Roman cities in Italy versus Nottingham, for example. I don't know if there are any evidence of the Romans still in Nottingham. But within their home base and within the borders of their city, they were not equals. They did not all belong either. But boy, they were good city builders.
Yeah. And then fast forward to modern cities today. There are cities in Europe. Brussels is one of them, I know. Copenhagen is one of them. I don't today have the knowledge and the expertise to measure how successful they are.
And on which metrics.
Right.
Right.
But I know that there are real attempts to retain mixity, diversity within the city. There is still the very noble idea of social housing, that the public authorities use their power, local government uses its power to make sure that a significant or, you know, better still, a large part of the housing stock within the city is available to people of fewer means.
Yeah.
You know, however you define it, that's where it gets difficult. But the principle does local government have the power to do this, or national government? Yes.
Yes.
And then it's a question of political will.
Yeah.
And economics, fine. I'm not saying it's easy. But but there are cities that are trying to do this.
Yes. And in fact, as you again look at this card, what other networks could you reach? Could it be, Jonathan, that on a local level somewhere, however big that locale is, this is happening now?
Yeah. Well, look what we've just done here. The conversation has just naturally, God knows how we got there.
Yeah. But
we got
it's
onto
not linear.
We got onto cities and housing, and absolutely, you think yes, because what is a city if not a metaphor for how we organize ourselves and how we live together, and it's central to our vision. We've talked a lot about newspapers in sort of the big glorious sense of, you know, we talked about journalists taking on the mafia, taking on the corrupt politician, going into the war zone, reporting from the war zone.
At great risk.
At great risk. So journalists risking their lives to get to the truth. Okay. There's the granular, the lower level of local media, regional media, city media, which has disappeared from the US, from the UK, and is leaving a gaping hole.
When I would do PR campaigns back in, 25 years ago, we dealt with local newspapers. And I know on a national basis in Canada, we had 900 of them. I shudder to think how many still exist. So to your point.
Yeah. And does it create problems? Yes. I can't speak at length about this. I'm talking about headlines that I've seen in newspapers, but they're good newspapers, so I think they're there for a good reason. That there may be a link here between, sadly, we've seen a recent phenomenon. It's not new, but there seems to be, there have been cases recently of government, local government corruption or incompetence. Nottingham City Council has gone bankrupt, for example, in recent months.
Wow.
Now, let's not go into that and certainly not talk about blame and how we got there, but local media, city media, regional media have to be part of that public service to citizens. You know, we hold our national politicians to account.
Yeah, let's hold all politicians
exactly.
to account.
And that has to be happening at the regional level, at the level of the city.
Yeah. Because a lot of them are making false promises that they never intend to fulfill or try to fulfill.
Yeah.
All right. So now back to you at one last time on that summit and seeing your collective take form as a market square with all that you described, the diversity, the vitality, the vibrancy, the chattering. Do you feel any difference with view to igniting your meaningful change?
Yeah, I'm wondering if we haven't stumbled together on a first answer, a sketch of what that new form of organization is. In some way.
Tell me more.
Well, we talk about a marketplace for ideas, don't we? And that how that's again like a broad church, a noble tradition in politics that could be lost sometimes, where the parties are not even churches at all, never mind broad, narrow, hostile places.
Shouting matches, boxing rings.
Right. And there is something about the market, you know, marketplace for ideas. Whatever we feel about the economy and whatever our views on capitalism and however far to the left or the right we are, I would like to think we can agree, certainly within Europe, because I think it's part of an ancient tradition here, but I'm sure that Canadians and Americans would recognize this as well. There's something very noble and simple about a market where people come together to present what they've done.
And what is a market but an exchange?
Yes, a meeting place and an exchange.
Yeah. So not just, of course, a financial exchange. It is a connection.
Right.
It's a forum.
Yes.
For exchange.
Yes, yes. And I'm also taken back, Marianne, I wanted to bring this in earlier. You told a wonderful story in London because it had just happened to you, where you'd been walking in the street close to where we were recording, and you had walked into, you needed part of your coat sewing, the inside of
the lining.
Yes, my winter
coat had a hole in the pocket, which was problematic when I was taking care of my son and daughter-in-law's dog, because things kept falling through, like dog cookies. And
and if I remember correctly, this lovely lady repaired something for you for free. She didn't charge you.
Yes, she said she wouldn't charge
you. She wouldn't charge you.
Yeah, I went back and paid her.
Right.
She wouldn't charge me.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a lovely example of where we have exchange that doesn't require money because it's rooted in trust and a certain culture, neighborhood. And I think a market speaks to that as well. Community, absolutely. And I look to you, Brittany, because I know your affinity with Italy now, and you've seen that. You talk very movingly about how an Italian mother may be passing on years of knowledge and skill and love of cooking and recipes that will be lost,
Unless traditions,
unless they're passed on in some way. So what are we saying here? There's a market in its pure sense, people coming together, meeting in a particular locality, exchanging. There is that space is dripping with culture, the tradition that come together over time. And what does that mean, trust?
How do you get from culture to trust?
They're intimately linked, aren't they? The two sort of go hand in hand. A good culture is one that leads to trust.
Tell us, you know, how.
A culture of trust.
A culture of trust.
Mm.
So it's a culture that cultivates trust as a result of having a culture distinct from trust. The culture is related to trust.
Yes. The opposite of trust is, because when I think of the market, I like the idea that it's self-regulating, self-policing, that people know the market because it's there every Tuesday. It's a Tuesday market, or it's a Thursday market. It's,
okay,
you know, yeah. So there's rhythm there.
Yeah.
Familiarity, maybe the same stalls that have been there for it. So there's passage of time. Yeah. So we have tradition, familiarity, and through that comes trust, because as we know, in communities very quickly push out those who break the rules. There is nothing, no police force can match the power of ostracization within a family or amongst friends. Shaming people is more powerful than any truncheon or police cell.
Well, because the contrast, again, coming together in the market, being together versus being pushed out of that forum.
Right.
Excluded from because you're violating whatever the practice that the norms are within that community, that market.
Yeah. That's right. And it takes time.
Yeah.
The trust gathers with time. Trust takes time.
So
people see behaviors and they see that, the fact that we're not stealing from each other, that's good. We're benefiting. So you need time to see the benefits of it.
Well, and also we've spoken of various aspects of trust, one of which is reliability.
Yeah.
And so if it's predictably held on a certain date, you can rely on the fact that your food, for example, that you purchase only has to last till that date when you get new. And then you can rely on the quality, the caliber of what, because you've bought it last week and now.
That's a great point, because, and this is where the market produces quality, it's trust. If somebody's food continues to make people ill,
they're not welcome in the market anymore. That
people will know. People will, news will spread of that.
And
it's.
And news will spread. Nothing like word of mouth marketing,
right?
Or disparagement. So
So that's not a hostile market. It's one where
self-regulating, and it's a gathering place, isn't it?
Yes. Exactly. It's public. Mm-hmm. It's public.
Mm-hmm. No holds barred. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Whoever steps into that square or wherever it's held.
Exactly. That's right.
You don't have to pay to enter.
Yes.
You're free to go from stall to stall just looking.
Yeah, really important.
Breathing in the lovely smells.
Right. Yeah, really important.
So no barrier to entry.
So I think all of these things come together to create something which is very special.
So what did we stumble upon here?
I'm not sure if it's a form of organization. It might be. We definitely got onto something that is helpful.
Needs to percolate a little bit, simmer a little bit.
Yeah, because you could argue a collective is, a market is a wonderful, in this local sense, And as you said, the last point you made is so important, because it tells us why so many private markets have gone wrong today. Because they're not truly markets, or they're rigged in some way, or abused by the dominance of one or two major players, you know, anything mm-hmm. but the real market that we're talking about.
Yeah. Self-interest.
Yeah, yeah.
Dare I say greed?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So the market is not the collective. They're very different things. And yet there's something that I think we can explore there. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Thank you, Jonathan.
No, thank you.
One of the measures of the meaningfulness of a change is the number of people for whom it matters enough to help realize it. Throughout these conversations, Jonathan has spoken of those in his network, his close friends, his family, and those he worked with professionally in the European Union and non-governmental organizations. It's likely that some, or even many of them, will find that his vision resonates. Some may be willing to act on it. Some may, in fact, already be acting in some way similar. As this conversation reveals, the size of any network is not finite. It expands when those inside of it choose to then share it with their networks. Like a market square, it's then filled with diversity, vitality, vibrancy, and, yes, chatter. It's an exchange of ideas alive with possibilities. And if those people then share its values and significance, the integrity of the larger network provides the leader with a credible, trustworthy, and committed collective. Engaged, aligned, and mobilized. Imagine the power of that when it comes to helping ignite meaningful change. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.